But heck, you know, think about that. Angels, ghosts, and drugs. That too is worthy of a conversation here in just a second with Dr. Judith Orloff, who is a psychiatrist. Obviously, in order to be a psychiatrist, you have to be a medical doctor. And there's a lot of use of drugs that go on to connect people to the divine. And that's got to be part of the conversation too, if we're talking about trying to reveal messages to ourselves next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Dr. Judith Orloff is joining us on Coast to Coast for an extra hour, which is very nice of you. Thank you. So here's my proposal, actually, is that we go to the calls a little bit early because the phones have been kind of crazy. So why don't we give the numbers out at the bottom of the hour and we'll start to bring people into the conversation about angels, ghosts, and dreams. And I asked you a question about what we can know about the message based on the form in which we are receiving it. So if it's an angel message, can we assume that it's from the divine? If it's a ghostly message, what can we assume about anything?
Yes, well, those are great questions. I think it depends on the message itself because often the messenger can be deceptive. I mean, you can have an angel who's telling you to do exactly the wrong thing. And one thing that I really talk about in Stress and Second Sight is that we always, regardless of who gives us the messages, we have to tap into our gut and our inner wisdom and defer to that. Because you have to be very discriminating. I had a patient have a dream about her soulmate. She was given the name of the soulmate, the date the soulmate would arrive, and she saw exactly what he looked like. And this came through very clearly. And to the date, the man arrived, and he fit all of those qualifications. The only problem was she didn't like him. He was he was not very respectful to women, and she just didn't like him. And she asked me, but I had this dream. Should I marry him? And my answer is, of course not. I don't care what or who tells you what or how accurate it is. If it doesn't feel right inside of you, you have to defer and trust your inner wisdom. Part of the spiritual lessons in all of this is learning to trust yourself. And there are impish energies out there. I mean, you might be given various kinds of guidance that don't feel right, but so don't do it. However, you need to know what kind of guidance does feel right. And if you get a legitimate angel and the angel is telling you something that feels right to do and is a blessing, I hope you can do it. But there's a certain resonance that happens inside. It feels right. There's a sense of illumination. When I was talking about my experience of hearing the angels singing, there was something so right and so primal and so beautiful and so nurturing that I would never dismiss it. I mean, it
Sure.
felt that in me. But if something doesn't feel right, you don't do it. And if it's a loved one who's passed on, that's more of a spirit than a ghost. I mean, if the loved one has truly passed on beyond the material realm and is communicating to you via the spirit world, that's very different than a ghost who's hanging around who hasn't been able to travel on its journey. You see, the loved one in the
Sure.
spirit realm, it's interesting because with patients, and what I've seen is they often want us to complete certain tasks for them. They're very practical. They said to one of my patients, the father who passed on, go to the box, get the ring, give it to so-and-so, and make sure the other one doesn't get it, the other
Right.
relative doesn't get
Right.
it. And there are often these very, very practical concerns. And once my patient did that, then the father could go on. But it's always amusing to me and fascinating what the ones who've passed on focus on when they come back and communicate and what they want us to do. I mean, it could be as simple as that, or it could be, a more intense, like solving a murder.
Sure.
It
Ooh.
depends, on the
Yeah.
what happened.
I wish that happened more often. I wish the idea of crime-solving angels. I mean, it's such a cool idea. And I know there's ghost whispering and other stuff, but I just think that's really nice. Now, but I'm going back to the woman who said to you that she had a very specific vision from an angel about her soulmate, and then didn't it just didn't he she didn't end up liking the guy. So as you said, it may have been kind of an impish energy as opposed to an angelic thought. Or on so many of those romantic comedies, don't we always see that the main stars don't appear to be matched well? They're mismatched at the beginning, but through the course of whatever it is that they have to do together, they find out that, in fact, they really were soulmates all along?
Well, it could be, except this was a very dramatic example of everything she didn't like or respect in a man.
Right.
So it was pretty obvious, but it's confusing. But I want to say that when you ask for inner guidance and you're connected to your guides and you trust them and you followed their advice before and it's turned out well, that's the proof. The thing is with intuition, it's not vague or esoteric. You listen to the advice and you follow it. And if it turns out well, then it's good advice. If it doesn't turn out well, then it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So
no,
it's
fair enough.
Practical.
Yeah, kind of proof in the pudding kind of an approach.
Yeah, definitely. So
what can we assume about if we have an experience with a ghost or a shadow person or some of the other ways that people describe encountering something that had that was not an angel but was still a part of the spirit world? What can we assume about the message that comes from that type of messenger? Anything?
From a darker messenger?
No, just from any type of non-angelic, non-living messenger. So taking it into if you had a ghostly encounter, and that, as you said, the ghostly encounter said, you know, it's time to move on. Can we assume that that message comes from beyond the grave? Can we assume that it may just be just the opinion of that particular spirit or ghost and not have any basis in fact whatsoever? I mean, what can we assume by it?
Yeah, so if you don't have any track record with this particular ghost /guide, then I wouldn't.
That's interesting.
Follow the advice so readily, because there are really, this keeps coming up in this show, there are many things out there that are impish and that want to cause trouble and get enjoyment out of amusing humans. So you want to, just be very discriminating. But a lot of my patients, and myself in particular, I've had guides with me that have been consistent, that have been accurate. You know, I've had, since I've been a little girl and throughout my psychiatric, profession, I've had a voice. It's a genderless voice. It's more like a whisper. It's more like a thought that gives me information, and it's totally neutral, and it comes in and it offers me things, and everything it offers me is right. Everything. When this particular, it's very neutral. It has no emotion, but it can be very compassionate. And it sends me on little journeys where it came through one day and it just had the phrase, order of the third. And it gave me chills up and down my spine. I knew this was important to me, so I looked it up on the internet. And the third order, of course, is the order of St. Francis. And this was right after, a great environmental catastrophe that happened. And he was the saint of the environment.
Sure.
I know, and it's the resonance. I'm getting chills in my body. It was such a connection for me in terms of just resonating with St. Francis. And the order of the third, it's often given in a language that isn't exactly modern-day English. And so you have the great thing about the internet is that you can research your psychic visions. If you don't know what they mean, then whatever you're given, you just put it on Google it and see what comes up.
Yeah. That's very interesting about that order of the third. Yeah. And there's a couple of different ways you could even go with that, too. So the idea of that being connected to St. Francis, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But also then some of those things that we connect to it are the ways in which we see ourselves in that information, so that you learn, however it was phrased to you, it would seem, was phrased to you in a way that when you looked it up, that's how you would resonate with it, right? I mean, so it's almost like it was tailor-made for the way that you would interpret that, because otherwise it could have just said St. Francis of Assisi. Right. I mean, theoretically, that message could have just been much more explicit, but it was phrased in a way that got you to pursue it. And then in pursuing it, it spoke to exactly what it was that it wanted you to hear. It just didn't come out and explicitly state that.
Yes, and that's often the case because the guides want you to go on a journey. They want you to learn in certain ways. They don't offer everything on a, you know, a platter to you exactly as it is. You have to, they want you to expand. And the way I knew this was so fascinating and interesting for me and Wright was that when I had the phrase Order of the Third come through, it was like a church bell went off inside of me. And it was a gong, and it was beautiful, and it was, I need to know what this is, but I want to make the point. My linear mind had no idea what it is. I had never heard of that before. So, you know, I just had to find out, and it stayed with me since then. But for listeners to know what to trust, you have to know your intuitive yeses and intuitive noes. And I go through this in Second Sight. An intuitive yes feels like energy is going up. It feels right. It feels comfortable in your gut. It feels like motion forward. You might get goosebumps going up and down or chills of recognition, deja vu, like you've known somebody or you've been there before, and it just feels so right. If advice is given to you that's very authoritative, but it feels wrong, it'll feel something in your gut will go, the warning sign, no, it doesn't feel quite right. You know, and or you're trying to push or you're feeling sick all of a sudden. If you're one of the empaths out there that I talk about in emotional freedom, if you absorb negative energy, you take it in your body, you get exhausted by it. If you feel that exhaustion from these messages or feel toxic or sick, don't follow those messages. I don't care what they say. Your body's giving you important information there. But I encourage people, as you said before, to you know, take risks, go forward, try things out. I mean, if you're just beginning to develop your intuition, you don't know. You don't have to stifle yourself. I mean, maybe you'll be wrong. Sometimes my guidance is very, very funny. You know, where phone numbers come through. You know, where I get in a dream, a phone number will come through. So I always wake up, write down the phone number. And then I call it. I do, you know, and people are always afraid to do that. They, you know, what's the worst that can happen?
Right.
People would think you're crazy, you know, so what? You know, that's not that big of a deal, really, but, you know, to me. So I get a phone number. When I was writing Emotional Freedom, I was writing the frustration chapter. I was talking about how to transform frustration, and I was getting extremely frustrated in my writing as I was writing this, and I was developed writer's block. And I was going through a terrible process with that, you know, pushing too hard. Nothing was coming. So then this phone number came through, and I called it. And then the next morning, I called the number, and they answered UCLA Labor and Delivery Room.
Funny.
Funny. Know, I'm giving birth, and, you know, just lighten up. It's all right. It just got me to laugh.
Well, I have that feeling, and my wife actually punches me regularly in the arm when I get a feeling that I should say something to somebody.
Yeah.
And I never do it in a negative way. It's not a matter of like, I need to tell this person off or anything. I don't believe in that, but I will often get engaged in a conversation with somebody that I do not know who will just, it'd be a happenstance of a conversation and they will say X, and I'll just get this very strong feeling to say why to that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say it knowing full well that they could just laugh in my face and walk away. And I kind of even usually preface that. I say, you know, you can just take this or leave this, but gosh, here's what I'm really feeling like I need to say to you. And I would say like 90% of the time it's well received. I have no idea whether anybody actually, you know, acts on any of these things, but at least I feel like there was a reason why that person said that to me. And then I felt like accordingly, there was something that I was supposed to say to them, and I can't hold back on that. It's not up for me to determine whether or not it's true or whether it's right. It's up to me to say it.
Yes, and you don't stifle that. You allow yourself to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's the spirit working through you.
I mean, if I don't say it, it's only because I've let self-consciousness, I've let shame or guilt or something, you know, creep into it, and that just ruins everything.
Right. Well, I believe that, you know, in my work as a psychiatrist and you know, working with patients, I believe that healers are channels for certain information, and you don't even know what you're going to say. But you have to discriminate. You can't say things that will be, you know, insensitive or harmful to people. But sometimes the message just comes through you. And not just me, but everybody. Sometimes the message comes through you, and you just say something to somebody that is so helpful to them, and you never thought of saying it. That's part of this guidance that we're talking about, the intuitive guidance. So that's why it's so important. One of the things I talk about in Second Sight is go in and ask for intuitive guidance. But sometimes it's offered to you spontaneously. You don't ask for it, but there it is. And you can stop the flow of it, or the mind can talk you out of it. That's what, you know, happens with a lot of my patients. They get the guidance, but then they talk themselves out of it because it sounds, quote, so weird.
Right. Hey, I think we're early on the music, y'all. I think we're just a minute or two early. That's where I just had this conversation the other day with somebody who was telling me about transitioning out of, by the way, they were a psychotherapist, and they were so tired after years and years of hearing other people's problems. They were world weary of other people's problems, and they were becoming, I thought this was very interesting. It's just a conversation that erupted out of nowhere. They were becoming a career coach. They wanted to become a life coach. And they were going through the certification program, and they already had a degree in psychotherapy, and it sort of seemed like something they were really looking forward to doing, life coaching. And she said to me, I look forward to never being a psychotherapist again. And I just felt strongly that I needed to say this. And I actually held back in a moment. I thought, okay. And then I said to her, I don't know that that's the right path. I said, hold on to the thought. Leave open the possibility that when you're a life coach for a little while and you've tried something a little bit different, that you'll want to do psychotherapy with a select group of people now, not just anybody that called, not just anybody that the insurance company, you know, referred you to, but rather just now, if you're going to become a life coach, leave open that possibility. You may now have 8 clients or 15 clients, and that'll be a very different experience when you're just doing psychotherapy as sort of a side service to being a life coach. And she looked at me like, this is none of your business kind of a thing. And then she sort of looked at me like, okay, well, I'll think about that. I thought, okay, well, my work here is done. So I just kind of let it go at that. I don't even know what to make of that, but that leads me to say, have you had any visions, Dr. Judith Orloff, for the number that's west of the Rockies? How about a number east of the Rockies? Haven't had that either. Okay, well, coming up in just a second then. We'll give you all the numbers you need in order to be able to participate in the conversation. Don't know how many people we'll get to here in the next half hour, because I want to talk a little bit about drugs and where do pharmaceuticals play in any of this. And where does peyote, where do some of the natural drugs, where marijuana, for example, medicinal marijuana or not, where does that play? LSD. And is there a point to that type of exploration when we're looking at angels, ghosts, and dreams, the messengers that are trying to teach us something, reaching out to us, and what we can learn from them. But we'll start lining up your phone calls, if nothing else, coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. I guess we don't have to run the numbers here, and that all of the lines are already taken up. We'll run them at the top of the hour then. And thank you, everybody, too. Been enjoying the response we're getting for this show on the Twitter thing, at Deacon Ponet. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Aiden. And actually, thank you too for the concern, Eric, but I'm in a good place. And we are talking about angels and ghosts and dreams, the messengers that are trying to talk to us and what we can learn from them. Don't know quite how your calls are going to go on that, but that's part of why this show is always so fun. We'll just explore that coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Some folks are tweeting their questions, too, at Deacon Punnett, and I'll share those coming up in just a second. So, Dr. Judith Orloff, we're talking about about messengers and messages to our lives and what we have to do to learn to recognize them, accept them, and the different forms in which they may come. Angels, ghosts, dreams. Maybe some of this is our subconscious talking back to us, but maybe not. So what about drugs? What about peyote? What about LSD? What about some of these other, you know, mind-expanding drugs that people say then opened up a part of them or showed them, got them to talk to angels?
Definitely. I in Second Sight, I talk about my early hallucinogenic drug experiences between ages 14 and 16, where, you know, I took over many, many acid trips at that time, and never since then, but just when I was very young as a teenager, and doors of perception opened for me in very, very powerful ways that I think can open through meditation now. But I think that drugs can be a powerful opening. I remember one time I was looking in the mirror and my face started aging, and I was 20, 30, 40, 60, 90, and then I turned into a skeleton, and then my skeleton turned to dust, and I was nothing. I was looking at myself totally invisible, but I was still me. I just didn't have a physical form. And that lesson, that we are not our bodies, was a very powerful lesson for a teenager. You know, and I've taken that with me, you know, all these years. So I think they have their pluses, but the downside is that if they're not supervised in the right way, they can lead to intense psychotic experiences that take people years to get out of. So I think there's a plus and a minus side to them, depending. But I, at this point in my life, I don't suggest drugs. It's just my own path. I'm a Taoist, so Taoism is my main path, and that's more opening to nature and the power of the heart and the powers of the unseen through meditation and being of service in daily life. So that's my path. It's not, and in fact, we're prohibited from taking drugs. That's not part of our path. So that, you know, I believe that we can get to those places through meditation. It's not, you're not opening the doors of perception so radically with a substance. And it can throw you off. It can throw a lot of people off. I've treated, you know, a number of patients who've been thrown off by these experiences, or have done ayahuasca, you know, going with a shaman into the jungle, and they didn't come out whole. They became disassociated. And you have to have a lot of maturity to integrate what you learn in altered states.
You know, what that parallels in my mind, and I don't mean to besmirch the good name of many psychotherapists and psychiatrists out there, but there's a lot of folks who prescribe drugs, antidepressants, for people who are, you know, going through something, and they don't do the same talk therapy. So it's the drugs without the talk therapy, much like how you talk about somebody taking some sort of, you know, psychotropic drug without having somebody to guide the experience.
Oh, absolutely. And not being in touch with their intuition and your sense of energy in the body. If I don't use very many psychotropic drugs, but occasionally I will put somebody on an antidepressant for a short period of time if they really need it. I mean, if somebody's serotonin is so low, they can't move, they can't think, it's like molasses, they want to give up. I mean, it's sometimes it is a biochemical element. So in those cases, I always work with the patient listening to their intuition, seeing if they become too emotionally shut off, you know, seeing if their dreams are inhibited. And a lot of times I give much, much lower doses because I treat a lot of empaths, and empaths are very sensitive people in recovery, and, you know, who have used drugs and alcohol for years, but, you know, they were so sensitive that they absorbed all the angst of the world and turned to substances to shut that off.
Self-medicate.
Yeah, to self-medicate. And for those interested in that, go to Emotional Freedom and read the section on empaths. But a lot of people who've been clean and sober for many, many years have learned to deal with their empathy and intuition and opened up to the world without having to use substances. You have to learn to ground yourself. You have to learn to protect yourself. And that's part of the skills of life. And I believe you need that grounding and protection if you're going to pursue exploration of consciousness. I mean, anybody, even if you're, you know, your thing isn't substances, you need to be very grounded and practical and discerning when you go in. Because when you close your eyes and meditate and you really want to go to the depths, you're going to be going to the depths. And that may mean facing yourself or your own emotions, but it may mean experiencing realities that can be a bit disorienting because somebody's... you can't assimilate it. But if you're grounded and whole and you know how to work with yourself, that's different. If you're just going in, you know, for a whim or using a drug to blast open the doors of perception and you don't have the maturity to discern, you know, as we talked about before, there are negative forces out there that you don't want to open yourself up to.
That brings me actually to the question, one of the questions that was tweeted to me, which was from Lucerne, who wrote, do you have any advice for somebody who accepted the more darker forces?
Well, I think you can dispel them if you want to, and I assume the person wants to dispel them. I mean, they're black magic witches who are embracing that, and, you know, of course, that's nothing I support. But if you, you know, a lot of people feel attacked by negative forces or there's, you know, darkness around. There's darkness within, darkness without. It's just part of being in on Earth. There's light and there's darkness. But if ever, I mean, part of my spiritual path is learning to say no to darkness, no matter how menacing it seems. Being in human form, being in a body, you have power here in the earthly realm. Okay, that is just a given. And anything that comes along, no matter how weird it is, you send it away. You just send it away. Or if you can't send it away yourself, you get help with somebody else, you know, a good spiritual therapist or a shaman or somebody to help you send it on its way. You don't want it
sure.
in your body.
Let's go to Bill west of the Rockies, Phoenix, Arizona, on Coast to Coast for Dr. Judith Orloff. Bill?
Good evening, Dr. Annie. Although I consider myself both intuitive, I also consider myself empathic. My experience in life has shown me that I am both. But I don't know if intuition and empathy are two different things or two different parts of the same thing. And is that thing, for lack of a better word, chi or the force?
Yeah, good question. In emotional freedom, I think you would enjoy the section on empaths. I talk about the difference between regular empathy and intuitive empathy. Regular
yeah.
empathy is when your heart goes out for somebody. Let's say, you know, your friend is going through a divorce and they're going through a hard time. Your heart goes out to them. You're empathic. Intuitive empathy is very different. It means not only your heart goes out, but you absorb all the stress and the negative energy they're going through into your own body. You become
Somehow I don't experience that, and
yes.
I guess I should be glad for that. But, you know, doctor, when you advise people, you know, when they want to reach inside themselves to do this, you know, I told this to Mr. Nouri, that the question was, does it run in families?
Yeah.
And I said that although I feel it runs in families, I feel that it moves towards open hearts that are combined with open minds.
Beautiful. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And
yeah.
In my family, actually, it got passed down from the grandmother to the mother to me. And then to my aunt also has the, you know, intuition. And so, and then to the younger ones. But it's just, in my family, it's through the female lineage. But I agree with you that what you just said about the open-heartedness.
It's always a blend of nature and nurture, I think, in some ways. But you said something earlier that I really want to amplify. I, by coincidence, maybe not, I was reading that section on empaths today. I had emotional freedom with me when I was over at Starbucks, and I was just out doing some other work, and I had it with me. And I started reading a little bit about that, and I was really glad you point out that and I would even go farther to say that I think empathy is an overused word, or at least a too loosely defined. And I think your type, when you talk about being an empath, I get that. And I think that's different. And I think that too often people think they're being empathetic when really they're just being very sympathetic. And being very sympathetic and feeling being with somebody in their pain is still different than exactly feeling the pain that they're going through. And I don't think most of us really do exactly feel the pain that somebody else is experiencing.
Well, I like that distinction, what you just made, and I agree with it. But with empaths, you do feel it too much.
Right.
So.
When, an intuitive empath, in that way, yeah. That's what, see, that's what I think is the difference. I don't know if I ever told you, but I once had this horrible experience, and I became a dental phobe as a result of something that had happened in an oral surgeon had screwed something up, and all of the anesthesia had run out. And so they were essentially doing surgery in my mouth without any anesthetic. And I was, it was just an awful experience, and it scarred me for many years and kept me from going to a dentist when I eventually was able to get over that and get back to it. But it was really, really hard. And I remember watching a news story about a woman who'd been pinned to a tree. A car had rolled backward and pinned her to a tree, and it had essentially cut her in half. But the because the car was connected to the tree, it allowed her to live just a little bit longer, and she was able to talk to some other people that were around her. Something similar was used in a Mel Gibson movie later on, but this really did happen to this woman. And I remember watching that news story and just bawling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because I really could feel that. I really understood what she was going through, having been through this terrifying experience in a dental chair. And I think that's like one of, I think that's kind of the difference to me. When I'm being empathetic, you can't help but feel something so much that it, you can't even, you've lost connection to your world.
Right.
All you can do is feel theirs.
Exactly. And then that can affect your health and well-being. And what I talk about in emotional freedom is learning how to use techniques for grounding and protection and breath so that other people's stress and negative energy doesn't stay stuck in you, because that's not a good thing. And I wanted to say the flip side, the positive side, I'm an empath, and so that's why I feel so passionately about it. That's mm-hmm. I've always used to take on other people's energy, and I, even, you know, today I have to be very, very careful of who I'm with, not to be around crowds too much and to have enough alone time. I have to really take care of myself because I have a highly sensitive system. I have no membrane between myself and the world because I want to stay open. However, I've also learned what I've written in Emotional Freedom, the techniques of centering, of breathing, of shielding, of meditation, of saying no, of setting very clear boundaries with people, saying no over and over again if something doesn't feel right, and staying away from energy vampires who suck your energy.
Right.
In Emotional Freedom, I talk about the energy vampires, but these are skills that empaths learn. The plus side of being an empath, and I wouldn't give it up for the world, I think it's fantastic, is that you're sensitive and you're open and you are passionate and sensual and you can feel things and you can know things and open up to intuition and the secrets of the universe. As they come through, let's say you're walking by the water, suddenly something comes to you because you're so open to what the water has to say. And I'm talking
right.
about messengers and angels. The water angels are there. So empathy is a beautiful thing, but you must learn techniques so that the downside of it doesn't exhaust you and wear you out. I mean, your friend who is a therapist, you know, I've worked with many therapists who've never wanted to treat a patient again because they were empaths. And for years, they've been taking on their patients' stuff, and it just burns them out. They don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I like that. First-time caller, this is Augie in Overland Park, Kansas, on Coast to Coast for Dr. Judith Orloff. Augie?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Augie.
I just wanted to say, first off, I see you clearly. You are a beautiful pink, purple, and white light.
Thank you.
And second off, I wanted to just quickly tell you my little spiel about my story. At the age of 14, I just kind of went off on my own thing. I received my first attunement to Reiki, if you know anything about Reiki.
I do, yeah.
And then when I turned 17, I received my master's, which for me was a young age. And ever since then, I've just been open to everything.
Is that a beautiful thing for you, or is that difficult?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's beautiful because when I was born, I never really had a box. My mom, I'll put it this way, my mom dedicates all her gray hairs to me.
Well, I'm so glad you shared that. That's very interesting, and I appreciate that. And it sounds like you've got a lot to offer other people who need that kind of insight. Chuck is in Detroit, Michigan, on Coast to Coast for Dr. Judith Orloff. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hey, how's it going? I got two questions. First one, Ian, what's your infatuation with Twitter, man? You're always talking about Twitter. John or George, they don't talk about it nearly as much as you do.
It's a great way to keep in touch with people. Next question.
Oh, okay. Just curious. And second question.
It's not really a very deep question. So, I mean, it's a great way to keep in touch with people. And so it's kind of fun. Very immediate. And everybody has to keep their messages short, which would be good for you here, too. So go ahead.
Second question. This one's a lot more important than that. I was wondering why doesn't Coast talk about things that really matter anymore, like political things? And, I mean, we're always talking about shadow people and stuff that really don't matter. I mean, the people need to be informed of what's going on in this country, and nobody's being informed about anything.
Well, Chuck, I'm going to guess here and say that Chuck, that you've probably, what you're really trying to say is you want to talk about something else, and you would rather be doing something else, and I think that's totally fair. You always have that right. Express it in a way that turns that, instead of being something inward, into something outward. I think you find Coast to Coast has got a great mix of topics, and you don't really sound like a very regular listener if you're missing all of the conversations that are happening. If you go back over just even the shows for this week, I think you'll find that some of those topics that I think you're inferring have already been discussed. Where were you? Maybe they should have tweeted you and let you know. Paul is in Modesto, California, on Coast to Coast for Dr. Judith Orloff. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, good evening, Judith and Ian. I hope you're having a great evening. Listen, I want to give you a little background about myself. I'm a 50-year-old carpenter and pretty beat up physically. At 18, I started meditating with some Buddhist monks regularly, and that was in Oakland, California. Anyways, some of my best friends now are Hindus. We meditate together. And that, my question for the doctor is, I have major back pain and some anxiety problems, and I have to take meds for these conditions. Will this affect my ability to analyze or understand my intuition or answers from meditation?
It's a great question.
Yeah, it's a very great question. And I think, you know, to offset the effects of any medication, you have to have a really good diet that helps to ground you. And I think that's an area you could focus on in terms of the healthy foods that come in your body. I mean, I think that it's very important for you to focus on your diet so that that also helps intuition open up, and it counteracts the effects of the meds. And so, yes, the meds can affect you, but you have an open heart and you can tune into your intuition. So, you know, that's the answer.
Somebody sent me a question I wanted to read to you here, and I want to give you a minute to think about it. I think it's very compelling. Cheryl wrote, I have seen this tall shadow figure pretty clearly, then in more details in my dream. It picked me up riding a horse. And Cheryl goes on to say, I was wondering if, is it normal for a ghost to show itself while you're awake, then in sleep, that they come in one form and then another? Very good question. We'll get to that coming up in just a second, too. Also, we've got a full boat of callers.